The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Are you a horse person, Annabelle?
Am I a horse person?
Yeah.
Am I part horse? No, I do like horses. I used to ride, but a very long time ago.
Right.
Ever been in the sea on a horse?
Yes, I have.
One that could swim, I take it.
It wasn't that deep, so I don't actually know.
I wouldn't take a horse even into not very deep water if it couldn't swim. You're risking a lot there, aren't you?
Yeah.
I didn't know they couldn't do it naturally, though. I always assumed.
Me too. I thought they could swim.
Yeah.
I've been in the sea with a horse, but its feet were on the ground, luckily. But I thought if we did go out a bit further, it could swim, but I could have been wrong.
There you go. Maybe right. I am wrong. I read it somewhere. It's got to be right, hasn't it? It was on the internet.
Listenerpedia, can horses swim naturally? We need to know.
So Annabelle's with us from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Should we get straight into this? Get it over with?
Yeah, okay. You want the jingle? Here we go.
Misanthropic. Ignominy. Admonish. Rapacious. Incomprehensibilities. Word for the week.
Do you know what the word was, Annabelle? Because it wasn't actually you that gave it to us.
No, I can't actually be blamed for any failures this week.
Uh-huh. So you don't even know what the word is?
I do, though. It's obstreperous.
Yes. Now, do you use this very often?
No.
We had never heard of it, had we?
Not once. I never heard of this word. I hadn't a clue what it meant. What does it mean?
Noisy and difficult to control.
Bit like Steph.
I knew you were going to say
a bit like Mark.
That was easy, wasn't it?
Do you want to go first?
It all depends how our producers have put these clips in our running order, and I am first. You'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, the challenge is to see if we can fit this word in that we're given somewhere in the week and make it sound...
You know, I'm sweating that on a technicality I might have lost.
Don't tell me that now.
Pronunciation.
I don't think pronunciation is a technicality. I think that's a massive fail if you don't pronounce it right.
Well, what about stumbling over the word completely? Let's have a listen. This is Mark's, efforts at the word of the week.
I'm actually wearing almost like, what I would wear in Dubai on my chest and arms. And that was mainly for UV protection. When I think about the Antarctic, how hot it was.
Hot? I'll tell you, if I got that cold, Steph, I would get very obstreperous. What are you laughing at?
Obstreperous.
What's it supposed to be?
Obstreperous. You basically transposed her name and the word into one.
And it's a bit like yesterday with the profiteroles, was it?
Yeah.
The peripherals?
Peripheral profiteroles.
Peripheral profiteroles we had yesterday.
Yeah.
That's a portmanteau.
So I did pronounce it wrong.
You did.
Only very slightly. What about what about the context it was used in?
Yes, I'd say the context was appropriate. But I think that word, the way you pronounced it, could only be used if you were specifically talking about Steph. Because I think that's quite funny, obstreperous.
Look at her face.
Now I feel a bit more confident.
Come on.
All right, listen, this is a disaster. I mean, you thought mine was bad. Have a listen to this.
Welcome back to The Ticket. Right, it's time to check in with a man who could sometimes be described as obstreperous. I tripped over that, didn't I? But in a good way, he is our intrepid traveller and brand new dad, that's Shane.
Definitely Steph.
Yes!
What?
Oh, yes.
That's the last time I'm getting clips for this show. I've been sweating over that computer all morning. Definitely Steph.
It's only fair. You said
she
a different word.
She tripped over it.
You might have, well, said balmy instead of obstreperous.
All right, then.
Yes. Oh, okay.
That's the second week, isn't it?
Mm.
There's
From
always
September.
Next week. There's always next
There's
week.
Been something strange since I got back off vacation.
Has there?
Yeah. You've been fixing it. You've been doing something.
Yeah, no.
You've won them all since I got back
from
vacation.
I don't have to do anything.
Actually,
you're doing it to yourself.
Yeah. I also lost to Serena as well. 3 weeks I've gone without a win.
Whoa. From September, we'll start counting these. We need to have some kind of cup at the end of this. I'd like to have that on my fireplace.
Year-end cup.
Yeah, we do.
I'm sure it's all completely fair and above board. And Steph, you can pay me later.
I will do. Checks in the post.
All right. So Steph's our winner this week. So you can do the bulk of the work now. You can do ask all the questions and do all the analysis.
Oh, he's bitter.
And all the book stuff.
Oh, it's not nice.
There's another
it?
Chance next week, though. Would you like the word for next week?
Yes. Go on, then.
Okay.
Right, let me get my pen.
I'm poised.
Yeah.
Poised.
Right,
ready?
Yeah.
Okay. The word is obsequious.
It's very similar to what we've just had, isn't it?
I don't know whether that'll be a good thing or a bad thing for you guys.
How do you spell it?
O-B-S-E-Q-U-I-O-U-S.
Can I just say, I wrote that down and I had spelled it, right?
Well done.
Gold star. Obsequious.
Obsequious.
Right. And meaning?
Want to guess what it means?
Something like obnoxious? Somebody that's not very nice?
Not really. Definition is obedient or attentive to an excessive or servile degree. Would you like an example sentence?
Mm. Yes, please.
They were served by obsequious waiters.
Does that make sense? I've had a waiter like that before.
So what did you say? Obedient and...
Obedient or attentive to an excessive or servile degree.
Too much.
Sucking up,
so somebody that's savolating all over you when
brown
you're trying
noses.
To have your soup.
Yeah. Annoying.
Yeah.
Get away.
Sucking up.
You've asked me if I'm enjoying it five times. I've got me mouthful.
You'll get a tip if you go away.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it.
Obsequious. Okay, we're going to try and work that in within the next week somewhere. And we'll find out how I won next Sunday.
I'm going to practice all weekend. All weekend I'm going to practice this.
We're going to come back in just a couple of minutes with some great book news for you. We'd like you to get involved in that conversation if you would.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Because Annabelle is with us from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Absolutely, and we get to talk about some book news. And I found some goodies this week, Annabelle. You're going to like these.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Go for it.
New Netflix show called American Anarchist has just shown how powerful a book can be. Has anyone seen this show yet?
No,
it's a documentary.
I've never heard of it.
Really?
No.
Well, I've seen it there. It's been there for about a month, I think. And I've been kind of like scrolling past it when I look at what I want to watch on TV because it just sounded a little bit, I don't know if I'm interested in that. I didn't know much about the story. So have you heard of the Anarchist Cookbook?
No.
You haven't. Right. This is a cookbook that was published back in 1970 by a guy called William Powell. He wrote it when he was 19 years old. And what he did was he used other available books and military manuals as his source to put the content together. So he'd got all of these facts from books that were already out there that had already been published.
Yeah.
He just put everything in one place.
So he just compiled all the information in like a
Is he
dictionary.
Allowed to do that?
Yeah, I think so.
Without permission?
Yeah. I think you can take certain things from other books, can't you?
Yeah.
As long as you're not writing it verbatim.
Word for word. Yeah. Okay.
As long as it's not plagiarised, in which case you have to...
Get permission.
Yeah.
So he used all of these other books. He put it all together, but it's basically a host of recipes on how to make things like explosives, silencers for guns, tear gas, terrible stuff. And he was an angry 19-year-old when he wrote this book. So since its publication, the finger's been pointed at the book when atrocities have happened around the world. Things like the Columbine Killers had a copy of this book when they searched the house.
When was it published?
1970.
Okay.
Long time ago, but it's still out there. James Holmes, who murdered 24 people inside a movie theatre in Aurora in the United States, had a copy of this book. Another one was Zvonko Busic, who was a Croatian nationalist. You might remember this. He hijacked a TWA flight back in 1976. He had phony bombs, and he left a real bomb at Grand Central Terminal that killed a police officer who tried to deactivate it at the time. So this book has had the finger pointed at it in lots and lots of terribly bad situations.
So the author's being blamed?
Yeah, he's been not directly blamed. He's never been taken to court over this. But in the documentary, he says that he feels really remorseful, as you would, at the thought that this book has been involved in so many horrible crimes. But he thought that when he wrote it, that it would just disappear. That it would just kind of fizzle out.
Why would he think that if he's, you know, writing these... It's almost like an instruction manual, isn't it, on how to carry out these atrocities?
It is. That's exactly what it is. An instruction manual.
So how can he be so naive as to think, no, you know, people that want to do those kind of things wouldn't pick up the book and read it?
Because he was 19.
Why would you want to write something like that at 19?
Don't know. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, you're 19 years old, twiddling your thumbs. Like, I guess you want to put a book together. You think, why is this information not readily available in one place? So you think, oh, I'll do that. Because he clearly wasn't thinking.
Well,
but now he's
parallels.
Remorseful. Now he's regrets it.
Yeah, completely. He's drawn parallels between the publication of his book, The Words of an Angry 19-Year-Old, and also the internet, where kids are pretty much self-publishing whatever they're thinking all the time.
Yeah.
Online.
Yeah.
And it stopped him getting jobs throughout his life, having been the author of this book. He actually went on to work with children, less privileged children, and to help them. So he had a great career doing good things, but this book always came back to haunt him.
Yeah.
So drawing those parallels, he said that he worries about what kids are writing on the internet now, because when you're 19, you are a little bit stupid, aren't you?
Mm.
Probably not doing anything to that degree. But it sold more than 2 million copies. It didn't disappear, this book. They're still selling today online. He doesn't get any royalties from it because he signed it over to the publisher. So the publisher was getting the royalties for it. But they raise an interesting question in this documentary. Can the author be responsible for how their book is used?
No.
Don't think so?
No, you can tell that he's remorseful for the way people are using it, but he doesn't have any control. And especially since he signed it over to the publisher now, the question now becomes, can the publisher be blamed for printing the book in the first place? But it's not... You get into very tricky waters with this, because you could publish a completely innocent book, and then if what you're saying goes ahead, then you end up being blamed for something completely ridiculous that is a result of somebody reading your book, even though that was never your intention. Intention is a big part of it. That's my opinion anyway.
Like Catcher in the Rye, if you remember, the guy that killed John Lennon was reading that book, wasn't he?
Well, he had it with him at the time. Yeah.
And I do believe that author never went on to write another book because he was so devastated by that fact.
But we're not blaming that author for the fact that John Lennon was shot.
No. That's ridiculous.
But had the book been an instruction manual on how to shoot someone, would you then be blaming the author?
You'd be blaming maybe the editor or the publisher that allowed it to go to... I think there's more than one person involved in this.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you've got to blame the person that carries out the atrocity.
Yeah.
It's them that actually goes through the whole way and does it.
It's, I mean, really, you know,
would they have got that information from another source, or would they really need to read that book?
Think of it this way. If you were an author and you had to think about how will you're writing anything at all, and you're thinking, how is this going to affect everybody in the world? It's always going to affect somebody. Somebody's always going to do something stupid. And nothing would ever get written.
No, especially crime and, you know, crime novels. Yeah. Forget it.
It's a really interesting documentary. If you've got Netflix in Dubai, you can watch it on there. It's called American Anarchist. Definitely recommend you check it out. And something a bit lighter in book news this week. Have you ever been a fan of Britney Spears?
Yes.
I thought you'd say no.
Sometimes.
What?
I did. No, she was on my wall when I was about 9, 8, 9, 10.
Did you ever try and dress and look like her?
Not dress and look like her, but I did do the whole singing in the microphone thing. And I know all the words to all of that album. Oh my goodness.
Amazing. Well, she is
early
in the process.
Work I'm a fan of.
Just the early work,
the
was
the earliest.
By Toxic, were you still in it?
By Toxic, I was starting to lose interest.
Have me too. Well, she's in the process of writing a new book, A Tell All. Now, in it, she promises to tell us how she really feels about other famous pop stars. The question is, do we care? Do we care about how Britney Spears feels about other pop stars?
Do you know what? I think I might read it. She was just such a big part of my upbringing, you know.
I'd rather read about why she shaved all her hair off.
Well, that's going to be in it as well, because it does mention that, doesn't it?
Yeah, that'll be in it too.
And a bit about Kevin Federline,
Justin Timberlake,
yeah,
who she went out with when she was much younger. How old do you reckon Britney Spears is now?
I guess she's about 32.
35. I just felt like she was older than that.
No.
But yeah, only 35. It's still really young, isn't it?
Yeah.
But she's always kept journals. Are you a journal keeper?
Nope.
See, that's a great idea. I wish I'd kept journals.
I do, and I always try and start them, and I just find my life too dull. And I stop.
Not
today,
that
I went to
Isn't
the shops.
Isn't Facebook the modern journal?
Yeah, I guess it is.
That's a good point, Mark.
Yeah, I think
I'm
it
on
is.
Form today, aren't I?
Yeah. Except flat. With the word
Apart
for the,
word
the
word for the week. Week. Yeah. So Britney Spears, sick and tired of hearing half-truths about herself. She wants to set the record straight about who she really is. Mark, you love biographies. Are you going to read this one?
Having just read Phil Collins, I don't think I'm going to read Britney's, no.
Not ready.
No, I'm not. Maybe when she's 65, I'll read it.
How was the Phil Collins one?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Not dead yet.
I was tempted by that one. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, let's get into some books proper, shall we? And should we start with a podcast just to completely turn it on its head?
Let's do it.
This one's just for you, Steph, because I know you like crime.
Oh, I do.
It's called Criminal, which is a fitting title, being about crime. And it features stories about, and this is what they've written on the website, people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle. So to give you an example of three different episodes, the theme is crime. And shortly after David Brown was sworn in as the Dallas chief of police, this is one episode, his son shot and killed a police officer. And then this episode takes you right the way through to the end, just before he retires. Great atrocity is committed. About 5 Dallas officers were shot and killed in one of the deadliest attacks that law enforcement's ever seen since until 2001, obviously, September 11. So they interview him on the show about 33 years being in the police force. And then another episode is an interview with a 16-year-old migrant who tries to cross the border from Mexico to the US. And then you've got another episode, which is about somebody finding out a terrible secret about how they were adopted by looking up her birth certificate. So lots of really different stories, all hosted by Phoebe Judge, and each episode is between 20 to 30 minutes long, and they can take you to the 1930s in the States, to present day. So it's really quite varied. So there's something for everyone.
I like that. I like when you don't know what you're really going to get. You know the theme, but you don't know how the story's going to be told.
Yeah, don't know how it's going to pan out.
And what a great name, Phoebe Judge.
Yeah. Let's have a listen in, then, to the podcast Criminal.
I think he said something along the lines of, robbing banks is easy, I can get away with it. It wasn't exactly his quote, but it was somewhere on those lines, and I just laughed it off. Like, of course, yeah, sure you can.
Audrey Fernandez had been friends with Clay Toomey since they were in high school in Texas in the 90s. They reconnected on MySpace around 2006 and started a relationship.
Anyone that knows Clay, just he says things that can or can be true with a straight face, and you don't know if it's a joke or not, because it could very well be true.
But this wasn't the first time Clay Toomey had made a joke about robbing a bank.
I remember him just blurting out one day that he was going to rob a bank one day to see if he could get away with it.
Larry Smith, Clay's childhood best friend, remembers him making the joke when they were 15.
We laughed at him and told him he was stupid and went on about our way, but for whatever reason, that always stood out in my mind.
Larry Smith grew up to be a police officer, and Clay Toomey grew up to be a turbine mechanic. But Clay never stopped thinking about robbing banks.
You know, bank robbery is kind of the American dream. It's kind of, you know, we make movies about it, we talk about it, and I don't know why, but we like bank robbery in America.
But you know what? I feel really sorry for him, though, because there's nothing I don't think you could find that I haven't joked about where you could find one of my mates if something happened and have them say, oh, Steph was joking about that once. People joke about stuff. It doesn't mean they're going to do it.
No, I guess. But certain people, in hindsight.
Yeah, oh, that's just stereotypical. Certain people.
There's certain things that I don't think you should be joking about.
Bank robbery?
Yeah.
I think everyone's joked about robbing a bank.
I don't think so. I've never done it.
Well, I've never robbed a bank. But
no, but have you joking about you joked about wanting to do it?
Well, you know, if someone says
so, when you go on for dinner at night, hey, yeah, you know, what, do you think we could get away with being a Bonnie and Clyde and robbing a bank?
No,
it's not something that comes up in conversation very often, is it?
Say you've been shopping, right, and you come home, and someone says to you, "Oh, you've bought a lot of stuff." Yep, robbed a bank, didn't I?
That's a common joke in our
house. Yeah, it's a common joke. Mark, I think you're the only house not doing this joke.
All right, I'll put it to rights. I'll go home tonight and I'll say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about robbing a bank and see how it goes down at home.
No, don't do it like that.
No.
He hasn't got this. We're going to have to
do it in a more subtle way.
Yeah, much more subtle way.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yes, Annabelle from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature is with us. And we're talking books. You just missed a great podcast called Criminal. Lots of different criminal stories. And we're talking about how everyone jokes about robbing a bank. Mark says, I don't joke about robbing banks. I'm going to go home tonight and I'm going to tell the family that I'm thinking about robbing a bank and they won't think it's funny. Anyway, and then we just had someone walk into our studio who works behind the scenes and said, I used to work in a bank and we joke about robbing a bank all the time.
Really?
Everybody does it.
Well, they know how to do it, don't they? They know what goes on behind closed doors.
We're not encouraging anyone to
it,
obviously.
No, of course
but
not.
It is a joke that's been made in households, I think, over the years quite a lot.
Yeah.
Moving on to a new book that we can read on an aeroplane if we are getting out of town anytime soon, Annabelle?
Seeing as the Wimbledon final was just last night, I thought But Seriously by John McEnroe would be a good choice for the plane this week.
Yeah.
So the retired American tennis player, considered one of the greatest in the history of tennis, who is known not only for his skill but, shall we say, for his confrontational attitude on the court.
Just a bit.
Has released a second autobiography. This is his second. His memoir, But Seriously, has been released 15 years after his first, and that was titled Serious, the Autobiography.
So is this the second part of his life?
No, it's not.
Hmm. How does that work then?
So I'm going to start off by saying, from the reviews that I've read, I would recommend this for tennis fans, especially for McEnroe fans and anybody who watched the original matches, because it has been touted as being a bit of a rehash of his old stuff from the first autobiography.
Hmm.
He goes into more detail about people behind the scenes, but these people aren't necessarily going to be of interest unless you're an avid tennis fan.
Okay.
So, for example, I've got an excerpt from the review that I got this from. So, McEnroe rehashes many of the stories from the first autobiography and adds in tales from the seniors' circuit. But again, does anyone really care about the senior circuit? Some people do. McEnroe opens with a long anecdote about playing a 2015 exhibition match against his old rival, Ivan Lendl, whose victory over him at the 1984 French Open continues to induce sweat-filled nightmares for the American. So if you are interested in that and how far he's come in those 15 years, then I definitely recommend the autobiography.
All right, here's McEnroe talking about why he... wrote the book.
I don't get involved in any of the social media stuff, so I think it's maybe a good way for me to sort of give somewhat of an update of where I'm at. A good way to get a few things off my chest and sort of assess where I think the sport is, but more importantly, where I think I am and hopefully my relationship with Patty and growing as a person and looking. You got to work at looking at the glass half full, I think. I mean, too often in life, you sort of regret or lament the things you didn't do as opposed to appreciate the things you did do. So actually in this book, but seriously, I started with this nightmare I have at the French every year, which is reminding me of the match I lost to Ivan Lendl, where I was up two sets to love and never ended up winning the French Open. So that while it is a recurring nightmare at the French, which is supposedly, it is one of the most beautiful cities in the world and a great place to take your wife, perspective and time has allowed me to still sort of appreciate, hey, like the fans love me in a way there, and try to learn from a harsh lesson that ended up costing me big time.
I've read a great story on Tennis World USA about John McEnroe and Bjorn Borg. He said there might have been rivals on the court during their playing days, but 98% of the time, he says, I'm wearing Bjorn Borg underwear. Because Bjorn Borg has an underwear line and he wears it all the time.
Really?
Isn't that funny?
Brilliant.
Yeah. He's a great character, isn't he? I think the book will sell by the bucket load.
No, they're turning his match with Bjorn Borg, or series of matches, I think, into a film starring Shia LaBeouf as John McEnroe.
Cool, that's going to work.
Yeah, what a good choice.
But his first comment was, nobody from the film has been in touch with me, so I'm interested to see how it actually pans out.
I don't think he'll have to act. He's got the same temperament, hasn't he, Shia LaBeouf?
Well, that was one of McEnroe's comments.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see that film.
Yeah, that sounds like a goodie, that. I think that's a book I would like to... Now, that's a biography I would like.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah. But that's seriously, by John McEnroe.
Fantastic stuff. And we're moving from an aeroplane into a lovely hot bath, because that's as far as some people will be travelling tonight, Annabelle, sadly.
So the bath route today is Hello Sunshine by Laura Dave. And basically, the synopsis completely sold me on it. It's about a culinary star called Sunshine McKenzie. Who calls himself Sunshine? I don't know. She's got millions of fans, a line of number one best-selling cookbooks. It's a story that we know very well in this day and age. And she's got a devoted husband, happy to support her every endeavor. And then she gets hacked.
Oh, brilliant.
So secrets
are revealed. I was
hoping
this would all go wrong.
Fall from grace. It's got all that. She loses the husband, the show, the fans, her apartment. She loses everything.
What did they find when they hacked?
You have to read the book to find out.
This sounds great.
Yeah.
She has
to return to her childhood home and her estranged sister and face the music. And I just think it's quite relevant today, especially because celebrity is such a careful construct. And we're shown that all the time when, you know, a bad piece of history from a certain celebrity comes to light and, you know, it's completely ruins their reputation. And so it's a book about that.
Which is ridiculous.
But
really,
from the culinary
it?
World, which is a nice, interesting
nice little twist on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Laura Dave talking about then the working of this particular book, Hello Sunshine.
You know, working on this was so much fun, and I... sat down with bloggers and Instagrammers, and really takes place in this world of social media, and so it's sort of surreal and a little meta now to see it on social media. And this book focuses on sort of a woman who has it all, Sunshine McKenzie. She has a YouTube cooking show. She's sort of, you know, if you think of Ina Garten or someone who you love on the Food Network, but of this generation, she's really, she has the dream husband, the dream life, and then on her birthday, she's hacked, and it's revealed that it's all a lie. The recipes aren't hers, her marriage is in disarray, and in 24 hours, she lost everything she spent the last decade working for, and she's sort of left to figure out who she was before she was pretending to be who everyone else needed her to be.
That's awful. That's really awful.
I think the clue was in that clip that the recipes weren't hers. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's the secret.
Do you know what, though? Whose recipes are completely theirs, 100%?
You know, you add a little dash of paprika in something and it suddenly becomes yours.
No one's reinventing bread, are they?
Not really.
Like, I think that's really unfair. The recipes aren't hers unless they're completely copied exactly from Jamie Oliver's website or whatever. Yeah. You can put a twist
on
them.
Even the picture is the same.
Fish pie. How many chefs have got fish pie?
Jamie's got fish pie.
He's got a fish pie.
Yeah.
I'm sure Gordon Ramsay's got a fish pie. Everybody's got
fish
pie.
They've all got fish in them, haven't they?
Yeah. I think that's really sad.
Can you make a fish pie without
and her
fish?
Marriage, her marriage is in disarray. Who does not have arguments during their marriage or ups and downs where I'm sure if they dug out some old emails, it would look atrocious.
Yeah.
I think that's really sad. Is there a nice ending where she gets it all back?
I don't know. It's on my reading list. I haven't got to it yet. I just saw the synopsis and I thought that sounds like fun.
This is excellent. Why in the bath? Because Penny put so much thought into this last week. She brought us a book that even if you dropped it in the bath would not get wet.
I'm sorry, I can't compete with that at all.
And didn't every title have pool or droplet or...
The book was called Poolside, water, so it's a collection of books relating to water.
Yeah.
It's kind of perfect.
So why would you want to read Hello Sunshine in the bath?
Well, I don't actually read books in the bath. I listen to books in the bath. So I pick something that's light so that if you get too warm in the bath, because usually I get too warm in the bath and I have to get out, you know, you can pick it up again when you get out.
I feel like we learn so much about people with the bath book, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's great.
Big headline.
Should we get out of the bath? Get our dressing gowns on.
Annabelle's hot in the bath.
Stop thinking about that. And step into the back of a taxi. Should we do that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Please.
Definitely.
Okay. Taxi, listen.
Annabelle, you do look like you're getting hot over there, though.
Oh, gosh. Be Frank With Me by Julia Claiborne, audiobook. Now, I chose this because it was declared a winner at the 2017 Audi Awards. And it beat Emma Thompson's reading of The Turn of the Screw for Best Female Narrator, so I thought it must be good. And then I read the synopsis and I was completely sold. It's got a bit of eccentricity in it. It's about an author. I like books about authors. Basically, this lady, she's a great writer. She's written a legendary book, but then all the money that she makes disappears after she falls prey to a Bernie Madoff-style Ponzi scheme.
Ooh.
And she's got to write another book to make some money. And to ensure the timely delivery of the manuscript, her publisher sends her an assistant to monitor her progress, because it sounds like she needs it. And she's a very prickly writer. She begrudgingly agrees. And she says, okay, but I have these conditions. No Ivy Leaguers, no English majors. They must drive, cook, tidy, be a computer whiz, good with kids, quiet, discreet, and sane. Funnily enough, publisher manages to find somebody that meets all those criteria.
Wow.
And she's called Alice Whiteley, and she's put to work right away. And what she has to do is look after Frank, who is the writer's 9-year-old son. He's very eccentric. So if I say that he's a boy with the wit of Noel Coward and a wardrobe of a 1930s movie star, are you intrigued?
Absolutely intrigued.
So she gets to know Frank, she gets to know Mimi, who's the writer, and also the piano teacher and male role model that they have called Xander, and how he fits into the family as well.
What a life.
So it sounds quite amusing, quite lighthearted.
Let's have a listen to Julia Claiborne Johnson, who's the author of this, talking about this book.
Be Frank With Me is a novel about a 9-year-old boy, Frank, who is a very snappy dresser, very intelligent, obsessed with old Hollywood, and his mother, Mimi, who is a reclusive literary genius who hasn't written a novel in 25 years. She loses her money in a Ponzi scheme and has to write another novel really fast, and her publisher sends her an assistant from New York named Alice. Alice comes out to Los Angeles to be Mimi's assistant, and she thinks that they're going to be best friends, it's going to be awesome, she's got a cute kid, they're going to hang out and, like, you know, go to the swing sets and stuff. But it's not like that at all. When you have kids, this has been my experience, you think that you're ready because your kids are going to be like all the kids you've ever known. But if you have a kid who's different, who is, say, for example, incredibly smart, and you're just a regular person, it's kind of a challenge and you don't know what to do. And I started thinking a lot about Albert Einstein's mother, because, like, how did she cope with having Einstein as her kid? And where's the book about her?
That was your taxi book for the week, Be Frank With Me by Julia Claiborne.
Can you imagine anything worse than having kids that are smarter than you?
No.
Oh, no thank you.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yeah, Annabelle is with us from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. We're looking at books, podcasts, books for the taxi, the bath, and we're off on a bit of travel, Steph, next.
We are with a very handsome man, aren't we, Annabelle?
Yeah, Leveson Wood. His latest book is called Walking the Americas, and it seems fitting that on the ticket we talk about an amazing travel book. Even Michael Palin likes it, so I think that's pretty good praise. And the concept for this is that Leveson Wood sets out to trek 1,800 miles between Mexico and Colombia. So he goes through ancient Mayan ruins that haven't even been explored yet. So in the jungle in Mexico and Colombia, violent and dangerous cities, indigenous tribes he comes across, migrants heading to the US border. So it's all these different people that he meets along the way, the different terrain. There's a particularly impenetrable border, was famous for being difficult to pass, called the Darien Gap Route, which is from Panama into South America.
Yeah.
So the whole book is him walking this 1,800-mile journey and all the different people that he meets along the way. So
sounds like quite an action man, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's ex-army. It says on the back here that the one of my favourite reviews from The Telegraph is Wood's USP, or unique selling point, is that unlike a great many pretenders, he is the real deal, a former paratrooper, a major in the Army Reserves, and as hard as nails. This is a bit Bear Grylls. So yeah,
there's a lot of pictures in there for you then?
Lots of pictures. A few pictures for people who only like books with pictures. Rather lovely pictures. But words too.
Let's have a listen to him. Here he is talking about his adventurous lifestyle.
I think there's something slightly romantic about sort of leaving the conventional world behind and going and living in the wilds. I don't know, the world's a big place, and I think it's a shame to not see what there is out there, really. I consider myself a writer and a photographer first and foremost, but exploration's what I do. Anyone can be an explorer. It's really about having the right frame of mind and having that spirit of wanting to go on an adventure and go to new places. The way to do that is by putting yourself up against new challenges, being out of your comfort zone and trying new things. It's what drives human beings.
So here we are in the Brecon Beacons National Park in South Wales. It's one of the wildest places in the UK, and this is the place that I've been training for expeditions for the past 10 years. As a soldier, this is where I used to come, and we used to basically use this mountain range to run up and down pretty much every morning before breakfast. The reason the military trains here is because the weather's so grim, really. It really puts training into perspective, and it's hardcore conditions. I've led lots of expeditions on pretty much every continent. I've been to the jungles of Central and South America, all over Africa, Central Asia. A couple of years ago, I led the first expedition to head to the source of the Oxus. I also led the first expedition to walk across Madagascar through jungles and high mountain tops. And actually, some of the mountains in Madagascar were very similar to the ones that you can see here in Wales.
All right, Leveson, you've done a lot of stuff.
He's done a bit,
He's great, though. And if Walking the Americas isn't, you know, your cup of tea, he's also written a book about walking the Nile and walking the Himalayas.
I like this idea of being out in the wild. Ben Fogle, who's another one of these kind of chaps, but a little bit more clean cut, I reckon, he does a program called Lives in the Wild, and he goes out and follows people who have decided to move out from cities more into remote areas and like little shacks where they've got a gun and they hunt for their own food and stuff and make fire. And there was one woman that he went to live with recently who teaches a camp on how you can survive in the wild, and students can go out there and learn how to make a fire and all that kind of stuff. But it really got me thinking, because she was fighting the point of there should be places in the world where the land is sealed off, and if people want to live in the wild, if humans want to be wild, they can go and live there. And you're not buying anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there isn't anywhere like that, if you think about it. Where could you go and be wild that isn't someone's land, or they'd turf you off, or...
I don't know. I feel like...
The Amazon rainforest.
In some mountains, there's probably nowhere to
find somewhere.
Buy anything.
Yeah, but could you live there? Could you go and build your own little hut? And
me personally, absolutely not.
I do love the idea of that, though.
Yeah. I think a lot of people love the idea of it until they get out there and they realise it's actually really hard.
And how cold it is.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So that's our adventure book for this week. Travel, Walking the Americas by Leveson Wood. We're off to the kitchen next.
So I'm sorry if you feel shortchanged today, but it's not a cookbook.
Uh-oh. What have you done?
Oh, dear. So it's called Baking Powder Wars, The Cutthroat Food Fight. I'll try and say that three times fast, that revolutionized cooking. It's written by a culinary historian, Linda Civitello, and I just thought it sounded too interesting to pass up.
It does sound interesting.
So, simple summary is it's about the invention and mass production of baking powder, which on the face of it sounds really, really boring, but bear with me. Baking powder was patented in 1856, and that little can of powder that you probably have in your kitchen cupboard right now triggered a fight between four massive food companies back in the day. And the fight involved bribery, corruption, poison, and the Ku Klux Klan.
Wow, this is an interesting story.
So basically, the 19th century's baking powder wars are also one of the reasons that the US government regulates food and drugs so diligently today. And this book is all about how that happened.
I've only ever bought two little things of baking powder. Every time I've needed to make a cake, which is only twice in my life.
I don't think I'll buy any more now. I don't know all the aggravation that went behind it.
Look at the trouble it's caused. Yeah. Don't buy it anymore.
Don't buy any baking powder.
No, I got really excited because I use it all the time.
Wow. It's a little bit like when you first found out about the Lego story, I imagine.
What Lego story?
The guy who invented Lego. It wasn't called Lego. And it was another guy who invented it. And he never patented it. And then I think he ended up killing himself.
Really?
Yeah.
This is really sad. Can we talk about
happy things? I thought you'd heard of the Lego story.
No.
Okay. A little bit like that then.
Mm, yeah.
But it is always the most mundane things that have the best
the
stories,
ones,
isn't
yeah,
it?
The obvious ones.
Yeah. So that's your mundane with an interesting
baking
side.
Baking powder wars, the cutthroat food fight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. All right then. Young adults, would they be into reading the baking powder wars? Maybe not.
Maybe not, but I would like to think that there is a young person out there who's interested in Lois Lane and Superman, which is why I've recommended Lois Lane series by Gwen DeBond. Now, the third installment is just out, which is why I came across it. It's called Triple Threat, but obviously you need to start from the beginning if you haven't read them before. It features Superman's leading lady off on her own adventures and not merely acting as a damsel in distress.
This is good.
Have you seen the Man of Steel Superman, the one with Henry Cavill, the first one that they did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I must have.
That movie drove me insane because Lois Lane appears maybe three times and that's Superman holding her or saving her or pushing her out of the way, and she never does anything on her own, and it drives me mad. So I'm really excited about this book, and I'm going to try and tone it down a little bit.
Lois Lane's got a life of her own.
She does.
Don't tell me she's seeing someone else at the same time, though.
No. You never actually meet Superman in the first book. He's called Smallville Guy, and she knows him by his on-screen persona only. So she's in high school, and she's a reporter for the school paper. And something happens at the school, and she has to investigate. There's a mystery. And Superman doesn't really come into it except online. And she doesn't know who he is yet, obviously. So that's all it is. She's an army brat. She moves to the school. She has to try and fit in and make a life for herself. So for fans of Superman and Lois Lane, doing things on her own.
That's awesome. Didn't even know it existed. Fantastic. And we're going to leave you with one more book before we go. And this is a book for the Metro, if you are happening to catch that home tonight.
I picked this because it was recommended by Oprah's Book Club, which I thought was pretty good. And it's by Imbolo Mbue. It took me a while to pronounce that. And it's called Behold the Dreamers. And it's basically about marriage, race, class, immigration, and the American dream and the hunt for it. Features a young Cameroonian couple who moved to New York right before the financial crisis hits the US. And the husband finds a job working as a chauffeur for basically an executive at Lehman Brothers, which was a very famous financial institution that filed for bankruptcy, or the biggest bankruptcy filing in the history of the US.
I remember it being on the news, Sky News, before I left for work one morning.
Yeah, me too.
So he works as a chauffeur for him, and then when the financial crisis hits and when they start observing their employer's marriage as well, they realise that, you know, the American dream isn't quite what it's cracked up to be. And it's about their journey and what they do and how they keep their jobs afterwards.
I like the sound
of
that.
Sounds good, yeah. Mm. I think we've got a nice little selection there, but mine's going to be the John McEnroe book this week.
I thought so.
Mine is going to be the Criminal podcast this week.
Mm. Criminal podcast?
Sounds awesome.
I think mine's going to be Walking the Americas. I feel like a little bit of adventure this week.
Fantastic.
Just before we go, Seminen has texted in and said, how can I listen to this morning's business breakfast again? Yeah, I would like to listen to that too as well, Seminen. Thanks for reminding me on that. You can hear the podcast on DubaiEye1038.com. It's up there right now. Go check it out.